Voices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for informational and educational purposes only.
Better, stronger, faster. A man barely alive, faster. Better, stronger, faster. Steve Austin, faster. Be that man.
Better than he was before.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Dr. Scott Stevenson. What is up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. Ready for another one.
Yes, we're closing in on the Arnold. It's going to be here in no time. It's February, beginning of February now. We've got a couple weeks now, two, 3 weeks until we get
there. Two and a half weeks, yeah.
Okay.
Got the big get-together. How many people have you had that have RSVP'd for the Saturday? Is it the Advices Radio or Bodybuilding Nerds event, or how are you billing it?
I don't even know. Podcast extravaganza, I guess. That's okay. How about that? I don't even know. That was a really good question. Because in the past, we always called it our Bodybuilding Nerds meetup. And,
right.
And now we have everybody from Bodybuilding Nerds, which is two of us, and right. Everybody except for
themselves.
Yes. And everybody except for S2H and Dave Crossland from Advices Radio. So I think the Advices crew outweighs the nerds.
Is Dave Pulcinella coming too?
No, but he hasn't really been a part of it. He did a couple episodes and he's kind of not been around. So we'll call him a cousin by extension still.
He's welcome.
Yes, he's definitely welcome.
He can play the piano like if people are coming in.
That would be perfect. That would be perfect. Cool. And it looks like Sarah Bruce from Rough Rugged and Raw will be there. And I just talked to Austin Stout the other day, and I said, "Hey man, you're in Ohio. He literally lives like outside of Columbus." I was like, "Tell me you're coming, man." And he was like, "Yeah, I'll probably go." And I said, "Well," then I told him about it, and I said, "Please join us." So I think Austin's going to be there too.
Hey, hopefully we can cut this out, of course, if we need to. But I had heard, I just read this. In the last 24 hours or so, do you remember a young guy by the name of Ben Broadhurst?
We don't have to cut it out, man. Let's just say it. He passed away.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was true or not. I haven't if it be confirmed, but yeah, what do you know anything about that? It was a great kid.
Yeah, he was, man. And I can talk about it a little bit more off air, but all I know is just what I can share is it's a fucking shame. You know, he was a sponge for information. He was a great kid, and when I think about him, I think about what is great about our listeners. He was like a perfect listener, somebody who just loved learning and loved the shows. And honestly, man, it hurt to hear about that. I didn't know him well, man, but it touched me.
Yeah, he supported me and the things I said, and he had some sort of facetious names. He would call me like a bodybuilding god or something like that. I can't remember what it was. Like he's just like the god himself or some. It was he's being sarcastic, but
but kind of serious at the same time.
He was just a really really bright kid, and I know because he was young, he wasn't 250 pounds at 4% body fat. He got a lot of shit, but he held himself, conducted himself really really well online. And he was a bright kid too. He just needed time to, to put that into his physique. And I'm sure it would have happened to some degree. He could have been I'm sure, a really nice asset to have online. Just someone who was young enough that could relate with some of the young guys who can, easily be led astray by, quick marketing schemes and, the holy grail of gaining muscle and losing fat by doing face pulls. that kind of the easy route type of deal. He seemed like he was a kid who really could have been a really well-known good voice for bodybuilding for many years to come.
I totally agree. I also want to note, I feel like face pulls have been getting a lot of shit lately. Everybody I know who wants to talk about somebody not training hard, they say they do face pulls.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is too bad, man. And I know VJ and I had planned to talk about it on Bodybuilding Nerds at the end of the week. But I'm glad you brought it up though, man, because he deserves, you know, all of us, I think, to, you know, to just kind of shout him out, I guess.
Yeah, I think he had been studying abroad, maybe. So
yeah, I believe he was in France.
In France, yeah. I went and looked back at his Facebook page, and he hadn't posted for quite some time. So, and he used to post on Joe Jeffries' forum, but that got closed down.
Yeah.
So that's where I would see a lot of his posts, and I just didn't connect, you know, that I hadn't heard from him. Or heard, you know, been tagged on something or seen him posting. So, I mean, that just says a lot about, I studied abroad when I was in college, and, you know, it's something that's life, it's transformational. So someone who would do that, you know, is, that's just sort of a brave step.
Yeah.
More common nowadays, but anyway, it's just, it is too bad to see someone go so soon, especially when they were seemingly just a really good person.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I agree. And like you said, man, he is a really bright kid too. So he will be missed. You know, he will be missed in bodybuilding and by all of us. Like I said, I didn't know him very well, but it was a situation that touched me. There's no question.
Yeah, absolutely. So
on a brighter note.
Yeah, we got the seminar.
Yes.
And I do with Dr. Eric Serrano. That's going to be fun.
That's going to be on Thursday, correct? The 28th?
The day before, yeah. Or sort of, it's the first day of the Arnold. There's just some, like, I think some of the amateur bodybuilding events and
yeah. Those
sort of things going on. So I'm putting together my presentations, the Mind Muscle Mastery one. I'm calling it. I know, right? It sounds like you're going to be a master of the mind muscle connection after this.
Yes, yeah,
unstoppable. It's actually been really. It's kind of sort of ironic thinking about it. I mean, I just finished the Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach book, which I've got just a boatload of topics that I could have just plucked from and whipped together into a presentation, but I like to do new stuff. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment. So I picked two like brand new topics that didn't cover training in there very much, because I covered it so much in the Fortitude training book. So I picked these brand new topics, and it's just always so fun to dig in on those. So
I know why you did that too, because this is an opportunity for you to learn. You've told me that before, and I get it in my own life that I see that by educating people, you too are learning. So yeah, if you just invested a bunch of time and energy into one aspect, I could see why you'd want to switch gears and keep educating yourself through this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's the fun thing about it is, because I do that, then the presentation is valuable to me, because it's something that if I had listened to this presentation that I will be giving soon, like a month ago, there would have been things I didn't know, because there have been things that I've learned. So it's not just me regurgitating stuff that I've known for years upon years. It's I piece things together and connecting them and hopefully conveying them in a way that people will get that was new to me. That's the fun part about teaching, is that you're learning yourself. And if you've mulled over the information and recomposed it in your head enough times, you can boil it down to sort of its simplest aspects and then convey a lot of information in a simple manner.
Yeah.
People can get. So that one's going to be pretty cool.
That's the hard part, I think, for someone like yourself, is learning how to boil that down and put that into simple enough words for guys like me that we can walk away with the understanding of what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think I've done this one. I put it together. With anything I write or any presentation, I put together like sort of a rough draft and let it sit for a few days, and I come back at it. I'm like, oh God, that's way too wordy.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll look it over probably three or four more times, with days in between.
Yeah.
And sort of refine it, because it gives me a fresh mind. Once I'm dug into the information, I've got all these bits and pieces whirling around in my head. I'm seeing all these things from a totally different perspective. I'm in the middle of the whirlwind of information, and it's totally different than walking up on it as an outsider, which is what the people who are sitting in the audience will be doing.
Right.
okay, they don't know about any of this stuff. I mean, they know about a lot of it, but they'll be seeing it for the first time in many cases. So
sure.
You let it sit like that, you come back at it, and it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be just fun to give because I think it's gonna help people.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. So
plus, it gives you a chance to kind of do this in person versus. You know, we talk to people on the shows every week, and you know, you do everything through social media and your videos. It's different when you actually get to see people face to face and connect to them. It's a totally different experience. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love teaching.
I'm really glad that we're gonna be there. I'm glad that you're gonna be doing this again with John too. This is gonna be freaking awesome, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, and there's a thing at I think I can't remember if I mentioned this last time, but Bullfrog Nutrition.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Paul Callahan is the owner there, so you can find him or Bullfrog Nutrition on Instagram. He's having this big get together, and it's going to be. I can't even name all the people, but there's this guy, you may have heard of him, Kevin Lavroni. He's going to be there.
Yeah. Okay. We did. We talked about this on the last episode.
Jake Cutler is going to be there.
Jay's
going to be there, Guy Sestrino's going to be there, of course, John and me and some people that I've never met before. But, yeah, he's got some big names coming in.
I'll have to consider it. Like I was saying last time, I need to train, too.
Train, right. You've got to train glutes, I'm sure.
Leaks, right? I had a great glute training day yesterday, actually, with Amy Landry again. She showed me a whole bunch of new stuff, but I'll get back to that in a minute, man.
Okay.
I want to keep talking about this because I don't want to forget anything. So you guys are going to be doing that on Thursday after the seminar. You're all going to be heading over to Bullfrog.
Yeah, it'll be. I mean, everyone who goes to the seminar, hopefully, if they want to, maybe they want to go train glutes with you, or that they have questions that we didn't cover, because the last hour of the seminar is just going to be like a no holds barred Q&A.
Nice.
We're finishing with Dr. Serrano, and he. That's essentially what, from what I've seen, a lot of his presentations, they sort of start off with some slides and then they degenerate because he likes to just like pull questions from the audience.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we'll be, you know, talking about all sorts of stuff, I'm sure. And then we're going to head over there until I think it's like 5 to 9. So
my brain's going to be fried. I don't know if I'll be able to put all my effort into glute training after that. I was like, I think I mentioned before for the last one, I was already tired going into it, but then my brain was like retarded by the end of the seminar because I just was trying to absorb so much.
Yeah, it is. It is hard to do. I mean, I've got years of like just being, having my brain sort of beaten to the pulp.
Yeah.
You know, with all the classes I've taken. I mean, teaching is actually harder than sitting in the classroom.
Oh, sure.
Can be. When they hired me on at Cal Poly Pomona, when I was a professor out there, they gave me this just the schedule that my predecessor, who was retired, had taken on. And he had been teaching for years and just teaching the same stuff. I don't think he hadn't revised his lectures or his labs in probably at least a decade.
Okay.
So he could do it in his sleep.
Okay.
And they didn't bother. They didn't ask me, like, how would you like to schedule everything? They just gave me his deal. So one of my like, it was like Monday or something like that. Like my very first day, I taught a lecture from 8 to 9. And then I had a lab from 9 to noon. And then I had a lab from 1 to 4.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had a lab from 5 to 8.
Wow. Wow.
In one day. Yeah. And I was fried. Those days were just—they're just rough, man. And Sunday night, of course, I'm like, you know how people can be. I was like this too, and I still am a little bit. It's like I got a big day tomorrow. I need to be rested up, so I'm sitting there worrying about how bad Monday's going to be.
Yeah.
And I was a wreck. I was a wreck. You know, I got used to it eventually, but yeah, I hear you. Like you just, there's just so much you can handle, and then your brain just sort of gets full.
Thankfully, you guys will have Amy's donuts there to keep me going.
And the all-you-can-eat buffet and for lunch, too.
Yeah, I remember that last year. It was good. I remember I had some pasta and chicken. It was actually a pretty healthy meal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the best one they offer, actually. It's like the executive buffet. So.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. So
there was a bunch of people there, too. Like a bunch of people, industry people, minds of bodybuilding that were in attendance for that. So I look forward to seeing who shows up this time.
If anyone wants to, anyone listening wants to come in as a business and set up a booth.
Oh.
We're also bringing entertaining that as well. So if someone is in town, let's say, and they've, you know, they've already got all their stuff there and they're going to be at the Arnold, they want to just come and set up shop with us and
hell yeah,
contact me or John, and we can do that, because you'll have, you know, we're going to, we probably will, you know, we're probably, people are going to be doing, you know, Instagram videoing, and we're going to probably video the thing. I think we did last year too. We didn't do anything with it, but we'll be able to provide some video coverage of someone's booth, so to speak, or their table at the event too. There's plenty of room. So
if
someone wants to do that, yep, they can probably find it. Because these are, it's in a way, it's a captive audience. People are going to be there. But if you know you have a good product that, you know, people who are scientifically minded that have the sort of inclination that those do who will be coming to a seminar, like what John and myself and Dr. Serrano are putting on, then that'd be a good place to do it, because you're going to have, you know, dozens of people there who probably would be interested in your product. So anyway,
yeah, absolutely. Let's
do that. Love to have you. We got plenty of space.
And then on Saturday morning, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we're going to have the podcast meetup, which I'm really excited about. We've got it all lined up now. It's going to be, like I mentioned before, at the convention center, just down the hall from the expo, you know, basically one of the meeting rooms at the Hyatt, you know, same building, just, you know, same connected hallway all the way down there.
That's the one on the street, right? You have to walk across the street. Is that
above? No. You'll be, same side of the street. It's the, just literally the main hotel that's connected right there.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm excited to see what we can put together. And I've been getting some of our listeners that have been saying, hey, I'm going to be there. So that'll be cool. We're going to have Dr. Scott Stevenson and Skip Hill. I consider you guys like our headliners. You're like our OGs of education and information. Uh-huh. And then we've got Dr. Steve Ogden and VJ and IFBB Pro Haley Delph and Ryan Delph. And like I said, Sarah the Bruce is probably going to be there along with Austin Stout, myself, and we'll probably have some people who've been on the shows too as guests. I really would like to get Dave Kallick to come on. I just talked to him the other day. Dave's going to be in town, so if we can get Dave up early to be there at 9 a.m., we'll get Dave, and there'll be a bunch of other people too.
Yeah, he always just kind of shows up. He'll be there, I bet.
Yes, I just had a cool conversation with him and Dorian Haywood over the weekend.
Is Dorian competing again this year?
He's going to be at the Indie Pro.
Okay.
So he did like 5 shows last year. Mm-hmm. And this year, yeah, he's they started dieting him later. So that everybody will get to hear this. Well, at this point, when this is out, that show will already be out. But it was interesting because they found he got in shape really fast last year. So instead of doing a longer prep, they shortened it down. At the same time as a coach, that kind of scares me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's working out. It's working out the way they wanted it to.
Last year when he got in shape, did he sort of fade? And
yeah, he said that he felt like his first show was his best show. And then as he continues going, that he does begin to fade. So he feels like he wants to hit that mark, you know, to be his best, you know, right at the show versus trying to hold it for an additional month or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. It was very educational too. But yeah, we'll have the podcast just the podcast event that's going to be happening. I'm excited, man. I don't even know how, like, I can't even envision this thing coming together because we've never had one before. It's a new thing.
Do you know the name of the conference room and like that to tell people now, or we'll just
kind of, we'll have it a little bit sooner. The Hyatt people were slow to get me the information that we needed to sign. And so we've got it all together now, but I'm just waiting on them to let me know. So, it'll probably be available as of this next week, and we'll just start, you know, putting that up on our social media and stuff to let everybody know.
Will Best Bar Ever be there?
Yes, they will. Yeah. This is Mike is sponsoring it. Best Bar Ever's our official sponsor. So they're responsible for putting this thing together, and they're going to have a new perishable bar that's going to be coming out. So they'll have samples of that. And of course, they're going to have the booth that's in the expo. So I'll probably be hanging out around there too, because I'm going to be there from Wednesday on through the entire weekend. So
I saw that bar. Is that the McNally Booty Builder bar? I saw that advertised somewhere.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Like guaranteed all it goes all of it goes right to your ass.
Yes. Right? In a good way. Goes right to your ass. Right. Dot 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 in a good way.
In a good way.
Hey, have you ever heard of an exercise?
Does this bar make my ass look round?
Right.
Say it again.
Have you heard of an exercise called frog pumps?
Yeah, like frog squats.
It's like a glute bridge, except for you flare your knees out as if you were sitting in like a lotus, or not a lotus, but like a, you know, heels, soles together, knees out, and then you do like a glute bridge. It's weird, man. I did those yesterday.
Yeah. Sounds like maybe a Brett Contreras invention.
You are exactly right. Yep, Brett came up with those.
I think Jordan does without any load, he does like a high rep kind of frog thing like that. I'm not sure. I can't remember what he calls it, but yeah, kind of it's just kind of a partial glute bridge.
I can't imagine Jordan calls them frog pumps.
I'm not sure. I can't remember what he calls them. I'm blanking on it now, but he does those and he actually finds that they brought his glutes up.
Okay. Yeah. It's interesting because the stuff I did with Amy yesterday, we didn't use much weight before. We were doing like these heavy thrusts and they were loaded. This time we did a lot of stuff that was like body weight, like a one legged, what would you call that? What do you call it? I guess it would be like a glute bridge, not a glute bridge, but I guess it would be like a one legged hip thrust, supporting your upper body on a bench. And
right.
Then, levitating. Yeah. Holding one leg in the air. Just tell me too, Scott, I feel like just using one leg, you know, doing a unilateral movement like that, it takes out so much stability. Just trying to get the stability to do the exercise, my leg was shaking. Do you think that that's going to be beneficial for actual growth too?
It's interesting. I can't say I've seen research looking at that specifically. One of the things that happens, like when they've taken EMGs and had people do like dumbbell bench presses on a Bosu ball.
Okay.
The EMG goes down to some degree, and obviously performance can be impaired because you can't focus. You have to have so much. The coordination is lost essentially because you have to balance. So all sorts of accessory muscles get called into play.
Okay.
So there's some inability to really push and focus on particular muscle, all of the mind muscle connection. And there's been a little bit of research with leg presses, for instance. They find that if you've been doing bilateral lifting, then you get bilateral facilitation.
Okay.
So like if you take someone who's like pretty well trained and they can do like a 1,000 pound, and most people will recognize this, they can do like 1,000 pound leg press I'm just picking round numbers so it's easy to do the math.
Yeah.
For reps.
For how many reps? I'm sorry.
Let's say 10 reps. Okay. 1,000 10 reps. They can't do 500 pounds with one leg.
Huh. Okay.
For 10 reps, they can maybe do like 350.
That makes sense. Yeah.
There's some facilitation going on. There's a neurological phenomenon whereby they're able to activate the muscle and produce more force, have better performance when they're using bilateral motions because it's specificity of training. You've trained that way.
Okay.
So there's that. So that's going on from a performance standpoint. So I'm just kind of like outlining the things that are in my head when you ask that question. Is one, if you do something unilateral like that, it's new and novel. So you probably get really sore from doing that.
Oh yeah, I was sore last night afterward.
Yeah. So as long as you're able to connect with the muscle well enough to make the target muscle sort of the weak link and target it appropriately, if it's new and novel like that, the shakiness, you know, obviously tells you that it is, you're creating a novel stress and that's going to promote muscle growth.
Okay.
So if you're so thrown off that you can't connect with the glute, like you're just so wobbly that you've got everything else being called into play, then that's probably not going to help.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So there's probably sort of a kind of in between zone. You've been training long enough and you've got enough experience. Like that's one of the things that I talk about in the presentation I'm putting together, the mind muscle connection, is there's a little bit of research. A lot of it's been done. It's not a whole lot of research, but they've done it with like bench press where they ask people to preferentially activate the pecs or the triceps.
Okay.
One particular study, pretty fascinating actually. They had people ranging from like a year to like 20 years of experience. And most people, on average, there was no issue in preferentially activating the pecs. And that's something people can do based on some other research, up to about 80% of one rep max. I think we maybe talked about this on a couple shows ago. When you get so heavy, you're not able to really have a mind-muscle connection, at least from the perspective of EMG and preferential activation. And part of that's simply because you're getting close to a one rep max, which means you're using all the muscle that you can. It's a max effort. So eventually you're going to lose that preferential activation because you've just gotten so close to your true one rep max.
Okay.
But when it comes to activating the triceps during a bench press, and this is with the same grip width and that sort of thing, there's a correlation between experience and the ability to do that in this one particular study. So the more experienced you are in the gym as a bodybuilder trying to use the mind-muscle connection, the better you are, which kind of makes sense. The funny thing, and this is where like looking at that data, I'm giving away kind of like one of the cool little points that I'm going to make in the presentation, stuff I didn't know about, until I dug into it.
If you tell me now, then when I hear it again at the seminar, I'll actually probably remember it with the repetition. Yes.
Hey, bingo. That's, there you go. People get a little bonus.
Yeah.
And I mentioned, that's what I do in those talks too. I repeat myself intentionally.
So we'll call this a primer.
It's a primer. Yeah. So there were two data points there where they looked at the difference. I think the difference was between just a normal bench press and one where they were told to intentionally activate the triceps. And two of the data points were with people that had both had 20 years of experience. And one had I think the highest difference in EMG, so the best ability to have a mind muscle connection, preferentially activate the triceps. And the other person with 20 years of experience had basically none. It was almost identical. Okay. And the thing that was interesting there, this is just my interpretation. I wasn't there, I was collecting the data or anything like that, but right. My guess is that one of those guys probably had been using a mind muscle connection on various things that had become pretty adept at that, and he could try on his triceps. He could probably have done it with an overhead press, an incline press, a decline press, a flat bench press, various different things, because he's just been used to doing that. That was part of his perspective on training, been doing it for literally decades. Whereas the other guy had probably been doing a bench press as a pec exercise. He couldn't get himself out of that motor pattern that he had been learning and ingrained over the course of time. So you tell him to do, a bench press, and that's which he is always used as a pec exercise, and make it a tricep exercise. He's like, what? How am I going to do that? So I thought that was really fascinating that the two most highly trained people were literally at the end. I have to look at the data again, but literally at the end of the spectrum in terms of best and worst in terms of mind-muscle connection, at least for that particular, mind-muscle connection with the triceps on a bench press.
Interesting.
So, so you're getting better at the mind-muscle connection. So my guess is that you're going to be just fine. With that, as long as you got sore in the glutes, you're good to go.
It's interesting because now that you mention it, we pushed the range of that spectrum to the point where there was an exercise where I didn't feel it. And I used enough of my own personal training intuition to say, like, okay, it worked for Amy because she's trained her glutes, to the extreme, up to three times a week. I think she said she did glute work every day for one of her preps last year or something.
Right.
She's learned how to get them to contract on basically anything she does. But I had to draw a line and I was like, well, this works for Amy, but I don't think I'm going to come back to this one just because it was just too much. Like we were laying face down on a bench, letting our lower body hang off and then pressing upward like a glute kickback type activity into a Smith
type of thing.
No. We were kicking our legs up into like a Smith machine bar. Yeah.
Oh my God.
She was like, she made it look easy too, was a thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You need to post these, man. I just want to see.
There's thankfully no videos or pictures of that one.
Oh, that, okay. I want to see that one.
Please. And I'll never do that one again. It was okay. That was the thing, man. I couldn't get it. Everything was just like shaking.
Yeah. You can, I mean, your nervous system, you can just be like too fatigued to focus anymore. And then of course, you know, if you haven't, you know, training increases glycogen levels in the trained muscle. That's just a basic training adaptation.
Yeah.
And a lot of what you're feeling is metabolic stress subsequent to metabolites formed from breaking down your fuel, which is going to be mainly glycogen during the training. So you may have like run out of glycogen because you're just not as trained as she is in the glutes. Your glycogen levels could have been so low that you just didn't get a pump. You might have actually not had horrible activation. You just like, it was just time to stop.
That's interesting. I can relate to that too. When you say this stuff, like we're talking specifically about me doing this glute exercise, but it applies to everything. Like I can also think of having a similar experience training chest on another day, you know?
Yeah. That's what like a lot of old school guys will just, they just like, they train until they lose their pump and they're just like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
There's no point. Yeah. And it could be because they're just like, there's nothing left in the tank neurologically. They just can't focus.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at that point in time, that's a kind of a rough gauge of how much, what kind of volume you've done is how much glycogen. What your total workload is going to be. There's one particular study with knee extensions, and they had two different conditions with different loads, just like 80% and 30% of a one rep maximum, like that. And and they did the equivalent amount of work, if you just consider like concentric work, in both of those, and they got the same amount of glycogen.
Huh.
So the glycogen use, at least from the limited data that I've seen, correlates really strongly with total workload in terms of like literally, like the, if you ignore the fact that when you lift a load, you do the work, and when you lower the load, you've undone that work from a physics standpoint. But if you look at just the concentric amount of work or the, you know, the load times reps type of thing, that tells you how much glycogen you used and how much workload you've done. So if you lose your pump, chances are your glycogen's low, and not be able to train hard anyway because now you're running into a fuel conundrum.
Yeah.
You don't have glycogen to fuel the contraction. So the quality of your contractions and the stimulus is now shot. So that's not a bad rule of thumb to just say, okay, time's up.
It's listening to your body, you know, once again, right?
Good old Joe Weider.
Well, hey, what do you say we get to a break and then we've got a bunch of questions to get to?
All right, let's do it.
All right, guys, we'll be right back. Hey, guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends, and they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com, and use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. Guys, if you've enjoyed the education that Scott Stevenson has provided to us here on Muscle Minds, then definitely check out his book. That's Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. What we can get into the shows is just a fraction of the information that Scott has to share. He's dedicated his life, really, to bodybuilding, and he's filled the pages with all of this great information. It's super well organized, and I believe that you could take any physique to the next level. I'm not just saying that. I seriously believe that. I bought the hardcover You can get the hardcover at Amazon, or if you're international, at Barnes & Noble. You can go to byobbcoach.com and you can get the ebook there. It's a beautiful book. It's well written. He put his heart into this thing. Also, guys, check out fortitudetraining.net for his fortitude training guide, the plan that we talk about all the time here on the show. And hopefully I will see you, along with Scott and John Meadows, at their seminar. It's going to be on February 28th, Thursday, before the Arnold. If you're heading out, be sure to stop in and check out the seminar. It's going to be awesome. All right, guys, let's get back to the show. All right, guys, welcome back to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson. We are going to go to a question from White Ox about Tutka. He says, what do you know about Tutka? Which dose would you suggest for someone using an oral in a four-week on, off fashion? Would you run it with your orals or use it between the cycles of orals to help the liver the best? Some say you shouldn't time it with your orals as it could cause issues. Not sure what they mean by that.
All right. So what do you know about Tutka? It wants to know everything I know. not going to do that, but it's actually been, Tutka without the taurine has been used clinically, for fatty liver, cholestasis, cirrhosis. Doses anywhere from like 500 to 150 or 1500 milligrams per day.
Okay.
It reduces the typical liver enzymes. If you go up too high, you can sometimes bring down HDL. Mm. So it's an antioxidant, and it will end up mixed in with the bile as well. So it's really, it's probably one of the best liver protectors that's out there. It has some kind of cool effects on what's called endoplasmic reticulum stress. So you can look this up if someone wants to go and Google it. But the endoplasmic reticulum has to do with protein synthesis and folding of proteins. And because it's an antioxidant and reduces free radical stress, which can interfere with protein folding, it helps proteins fold into the right shape. So the shape of a protein is super important for its function.
Okay.
So if you have a bunch of unfolded proteins, you basically it's like, you know, going into a building or a mall or something like that, where you've got a whole bunch of structures, pillars and benches and doors that don't work. The doors don't close. The pillars don't hold up the ceiling. The benches are unfit for people to sit on them. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's the Tutka part, the ursodeoxycholic acid. And taurine is conjugated with that. So taurine is cool in and of itself. There's some little bit of ergogenic effect, possibly. I think it was with rats when it came to taurine. Taurine seems to stabilize the membrane potential in neurons. So this is one of my go-tos, just taurine in and of itself. When it comes to cramps.
Yeah.
So yeah, taurine works great for that. Like I always have that on hand.
It's quick too, isn't it?
Yeah. It works really fast. Yep. Yeah. So when I think we mentioned before about leg cramps. I think there was a question a few episodes back about someone who we talked about it because Ken had a client, diabetic or something like that, and was getting cramps.
Yeah.
I can't remember all the details, but taurine is a great thing to have on. You can use like grams of that without an issue. It's actually they're really cool. It has some anti-inflammatory effects. It's also an antioxidant in of itself. And there is a study in rats. I wrote a little blurb on this somewhere. I can't remember where it ended up getting published, but it's a pretty cool study on rats where providing the rats with taurine basically restored normal spermatogenesis in rats that had been treated with nandrolone.
Really?
Which otherwise was disrupting normal sperm production. So it seems to have some impact upon spermatogenesis and fertility. in that way. So that's kind of a plus of taurine. So the cool part of this question, I mean, you could sort of look at, you know, LIV52 or any of the, most of the liver aids, so to speak, are preventing free radical stress. That's their main action. So that's one of the things that the UDCA is doing, or TUDCA. But the thing that is kind of that, you know, I've seen people talk about, and the idea is that you don't use your liver aids while you're taking orals. It makes sense physiologically, is that if you're supporting the liver's detoxification of your orals, then at least theoretically, I've not seen this. I've looked around, but I've never found any data, but it makes sense theoretically, physiologically, that if your liver is super healthy, it's going to be able to clear orals more rapidly. So yeah. Basically, you're going to reduce the effective dose that you get. And if they had a really unhealthy liver, that, you know, with the first pass phenomenon was pretty poor, then you'd have a larger dose, larger area under the curve, basically a larger relative dose, given whatever dose you actually consumed, getting into the bloodstream and thus, you know, doing what it does for muscle growth along the way. So people would say, don't use your orals or your liver aids while you're taking orals, because you want your liver to become somewhat incapable of processing the orals the way the liver does. So you get more orals for growth purposes. So that's the idea behind that. And not that that's, you know, necessarily the best thing per se.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically, you know, potentially asking for trouble depending on how well they're, you know, how many orals you're taking, what have you. I don't know how much that, you know, how much that actually holds. You know, to what extent that really, I've heard old school guys say that.
Yeah.
I'm seeing based just on that sort of logic. I don't know how much of a big difference it actually makes. And there, who knows, there could be, I'm not saying anyone should do this necessarily, but there could be some sweet spot where, you know, you start to suffer some, liver stress such that you, you're not literally making yourself sick and you're not having toxicity issues. But you are indeed, getting a higher relative dose from your orals.
I feel like that, whatever that is too, like that would be a fleeting moment. Like, you know, if your liver is getting worse, it's only going to continue to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Go in a direction. Yeah.
How do you know? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like, yeah, if you go for like 4 weeks, like he's talking about kind of a 4 week window, and maybe, you know, the first, you know, at some point in time, your liver starts to get stressed and then you get a little bit higher area, greater area of the curve for a couple of weeks, and then by that last week you start to feel really sick, and right. Then you basically undo whatever advantage you might have gotten from having a liver that's a little bit incapable of processing orals.
Kind of reminds me of like the grapefruit juice idea, where people would and there is truth to that, right? That, you know, that it will impair the breakdown of something like D-ball, but in my thought, instead of like doing something that's going to be unpredictable, why not just take more D-ball if that was your plan, right?
Yeah, it's one of the I think it's CYP34A is the one that is involved with steroids. It's one of the P450 enzymes.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's what one of the things that grapefruit juice does, or the naringin or the naringins. Naringenin or the naringins in there will have that effect. I've seen the grapefruit juice does it better than those particular components, which are known to also inhibit the P450s, but there's something about grapefruit juice per se. Yeah, and that's a big, there's a whole list of drug interactions based on drugs that inhibit the P450 enzymes.
I've heard that. I've heard like you have to be careful with like blood pressure medications in particular, because you could have a pretty nasty reaction to something like that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a whole bunch. There's like hundreds of interactions now.
Wow.
Yeah, and grapefruit juice is a no-no. Yeah, people can. So, but people, yeah, people do that too. I've seen, you know, I've gotten diets from people, and, you know, this is what my other coach had me doing. It's like, wake up, have your D-ball with a glass of grapefruit juice.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the idea. So like at least, usually the clinical dose is 50 to 150 milligrams.
Okay.
Yeah, but even 20 milligrams a day can help with liver health. I've got a little section on this in my book. Yeah, even smaller amounts.
Okay. I thought people were taking much higher doses. This is of Tutka?
Yeah. Yeah. Or Utka at least.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So the taurine doesn't make up that much of the mass of the compound.
Okay.
So, yeah.
No. I thought people, cause I haven't used Tutka, but I thought people were using it at much higher doses, like 400. Is that right?
Well, I was saying 500 to 1500.
Oh, I totally misunderstood you then. I thought you said much lower.
Oh, 20 milligrams. There's a little bit of data showing 20 milligrams, yeah. But usually the clinical dose is like 500 to 1500. Okay. So 400 would be effective. Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
But even 20 is going to do something.
Yeah, I forget what the study is that I'm blanking on right now, but there's actually some data showing it can have some impact on the liver, on liver health.
Okay.
So it doesn't take very much.
I'm going to look at the next question here. This is from the Master Blaster, I guess. That's his name on the board. I don't know. I don't think it's the original Master Blaster.
Probably not, unless his ghost has decided to come back and go to the best message board out there.
He says, I have a question on insulin resistance. 43-year-old male on TRT, taking 140 milligrams of test sip every week. I have a family history of heart disease, type 2 diabetes on both sides of the family. I do blood work every 12 weeks through my TRT clinic, and my fasting glucose recently came back at 112. They subsequently ran a fasting insulin test, and it came back at 7.6. I want to reverse this and mitigate the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. I lift 4 to 5 times a week and don't currently do cardio. Should I be on a keto diet, or is a standard, clean, moderate carb, high protein bodybuilding diet a better starting point? I've been eating pretty unstructured with a fair bit of junk. Also, what if any supplements might improve insulin sensitivity? Thanks for your help.
Okay, so first and foremost, disclaimer, I'm not a medical doctor. he could have an oral glucose tolerance test done. And he can also, you can do this with his insulin levels.
Hmm.
You can actually do, this is a very oft used research and clinical test of insulin resistance or diabetes state, so to speak. It's called the homeostasis model assessment.
Okay.
Of insulin resistance. So HOMA, you can actually Google that or go into Google Scholar and find it. Thebloodcode.com has one of these.
Okay.
I mean, it just gives you like an index. You can plug his values in for insulin and glucose. And it puts him, when I plugged it in there, again, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not diagnosing him, but his values gave him a 2.1. on the HOMA, H-O-M-A, and 1.9 is the cutoff for early insulin resistance. So I would look into this first and foremost on his own, like take a look and you know, just dig around the literature, get an idea what this means. Maybe does he have a family history?
Yeah.
That's important too. You know, there are certain families where this will, you know, there's populations of people that are predisposed to insulin resistance. So I don't know what his ethnic or his racial descent is or what his genetics are. He could, you know, of course, you really want to dig in. You can do the 23andMe type of thing and get some kind of play around with that information. But look and see, like, what's his family history look like.
Yeah, he said he did say that the heart disease is an issue and type 2 diabetes on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. So see what those people have done.
Okay.
Yeah. See what, you know, how bad was it? How, you know, he does, according to this HOMA assessment, he's getting there.
Yeah.
So the first thing I would say is always common sense. If I have people ask me all the time, you probably get this too, Scott. I get asked out in public probably at least a couple times a month. Someone will see me and say, hey, you know, I have a buddy who used to look like you. I get that. What do you manage? All those type of questions. And then, you know, what do you think I should do? And they basically want to get kind of a free assessment. And I say, almost universally, cause it's the kind of the best answer that I can give. It's the most helpful one. It's like,
go to fortitudetraining.net.
I give him a card. I said, buy this book. It will cure all of your ills, all your problems. You'll be better looking by at least 2 points on the 0 to 10 scale. And I guarantee $20,000 more in your bank every year for the rest of your life.
Sorry. I had to jump in with that one.
It's true, though. I mean,
it's all true. Science. You can't argue with science.
It's science, and I have testimonials from thousands of people that have been to my seminars. But I tell them, I said, what are the five things that you should be doing or you shouldn't be doing that you aren't in order to get where you want to go? Like, tell me about your diet. I said, are you exercising? Like, no, that's a good start. Like, tell me, how bad is your diet? It's like, well, yeah, I eat a lot of burritos and, you know, fatty, cheesy Mexican food. I'm like, okay, is that helping you lose weight? No. I was like, okay, so you're not training. How about, what do you do on the weekends? Do you go out and get drunk? Do you drink? It was like, yeah, you know, I have 6 or 7 beers, you know, Friday night, sometimes a little bit more every once. I'm like, okay, there you go. And you can just go down the list. You know, people know right off the bat. Now, I don't think he's that bad, so to speak, but what did he say? I thought he said something in here. He's been pretty unstructured with a fair bit of junk.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, common sense, get rid of the junk, you know, start eating a little more structured. So, but some of that is just literally, he's not that bad off. So, just a little bit of common sense. He doesn't need to use a keto diet per se. A lot of bodybuilders, I mean, this is like, hello, I'm about to hit you with, you know, a stroke of genius here, but a lot of bodybuilders tend to be sort of obsessive or extremists.
Sure.
So they're kind of all or nothing. So it's either like they're eating with no structure whatsoever and just sort of, you know, trying to float their dopamine levels as high as they can, or they go all in and they go, you know, completely structured. They have, you know, to a sort of an orthorexic approach where it's, you know, they have to count every gram or they can't eat off diet at all.
Yeah.
So you don't need to do that. You don't have to go to a keto diet necessarily unless that helps him. A lot of people have trouble with sticking with keto diets, but if that is one that he can stick to, because the no carb rule is a pretty black and white rule, he could give that a try.
Mm.
But mainly just lowering his carbohydrates will help.
Okay.
Eating smaller meals throughout the day, that helps with insulin resistance. So lower glycemic index foods and more fiber. And I mean, this is all like this. No, this is rocket science.
Yeah.
You know, eat more healthy fats, monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fatty acid containing fats with a lot of omega-3s, fish oils, like even flax and those sorts of things. Almonds are great. Just doing that, so lower GI, lower carb in general, more the healthy fats makes a big difference. He doesn't need to necessarily use a bunch of supplements to cover this. All those changes would probably dramatically shift things for him.
I bet, man. Yeah, especially if he even admits like that he's not on a good diet right now. That's right. You know, if he's willing to admit that, that means it's probably pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean, he knows. He's lifting, obviously, but he's not doing cardio. So he could do some cardio. It depends on, I'm not sure what kind of lifting he's doing.
Okay.
You know, he could be, maybe he's a power lifter.
Mm.
You know, and he's not doing a very high volume. The more work you do, the more that's going to impact your insulin sensitivity.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, the more, so he might shift some of his training. Doesn't really need to start using, I wouldn't start throwing like, you know, GDAs in there. But he could, if he's got everything, that's just icing on the cake.
Okay.
But also start applying a nutrient timing approach if I were him, and or a metabolic flexibility approach where he's limiting his carbs to maybe late in the day. So he groups all of his carbs either around the workout on days he trains, or I usually do it at the same time of day just because it allows for easy structure. So a lot of people, it's an easy thing. This is why like intermittent fasting works so well for people in many cases. Like, they don't have to worry about their food throughout the day. They just get home and they gulp everything down. I wouldn't suggest you do that.
Yeah.
That's not, would be my favorite approach. But, you know, if he can just wait to have the bulk of his carbohydrates later in the day, if he's someone who trains at that time of the day, and then he sets up a circadian rhythm for taking in carbohydrates and taking in a large amount of his food late in the day, that can help with sleep as well. So the nutrient timing in that case basically is providing him with carbohydrates when he's most insulin sensitive. And of course, there's, you know, potentially some gains there to be had with muscle and recovery, that sort of thing too. Hmm. So just like, that's just easy kind of black and white stuff, but he's not that far off.
Yeah.
And he's smart to be monitoring it, you know.
And it sounds like a much better plan than getting on like metformin or something from his doctor.
Yeah, or if you just, you know, people just get it, you know, some other way. But
yeah.
So, you know, what it's funny, like if, so the thing that you might hear, and he kind of asked about this, like if you go and look around on, you know, groups on Facebook or what have you, and a typical answer you might get from a lot of people, tell me if you agree with this, Scott, is that someone would say, oh, just get on a keto diet and start using metformin or berberine, you know. And like that's just an extreme approach.
Yeah. That's but you know what, though? We're bodybuilders. We want an extreme, you know, we got to do something crazy and extreme to change this. That's what we want sometimes mentally.
You know? Yeah. But is that sustainable?
I like that.
Put it back into the yo-yo type of phenomenon, because he's already eating poorly right now. So unstructured with a fair bit of junk. So he didn't really mention any bodybuilding goals in here necessarily.
Yeah.
He's talking about his health and he's lifting 4 to 5 times a week. So he's looking for something. I mean, and he's got a family history of heart disease and type 2 diabetes on both sides.
Yeah.
He's got like big long-term sort of lifestyle issues that he's kind of interested in. So most of the time, extreme swings, especially I'm guessing for him, just getting the feel from his question, that's not going to be approach that that's going to be sustainable for him.
Hmm.
You know, cause he's not really eating. That's just, he's just sort of clean things up and move towards something that's just a little more, reasonable. That's easy to adhere to and stick to.
Yeah.
That's what I would suggest, just from more of a behavioral standpoint. I mean, needs to. Yeah. I'm guessing, let's see here, it doesn't really say, he's on TRT, so that's good. Didn't really say anything about his body composition. He's not doing any cardio. I mean, I'm not big on cardio, but for body composition per se, but being more active would definitely be helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already outside of this with the fact that he lifts 4 to 5 times a week, but a lot of the overall risk of dying just in general and from cardiovascular disease and metabolic syndrome related diseases is had just by getting yourself out of like the bottom quintile or quartile in terms of activity, just not being a complete couch potato. So for him, you know, if he's otherwise sedentary,
yeah,
he's eating a lot of shit, it might be like, you know, get up and if you walk your dogs is the one I always say, or find something fun to do, pick up an active hobby. And the thing you can do, I mean, he could look at those, like pick his family members, because he knows about his family history, his family members, and pick his family members, not like sort of in a mean way, but say, okay, there's my uncle Bob, you know, and Uncle Bob, you know, would go, he worked a sedentary job, he was really high stress, he would come home, first thing he did when he walked in the door was crack a beer, he'd have 3 or 4 beers down before he'd have a big, you know, fatty meal, yeah. And then he'd sit down and watch TV. So, and Bob, you know, Uncle Bob died when he was 53 of a heart attack or what have you. So you can use that as a lesson. Like this could be where I'm going, where I'm heading.
Yeah.
So what should I do? You know, he's not that bad. He's not, it's not like he's drinking. He didn't mention that at least, but he's eating an unstructured diet. So maybe instead of a beer, he comes in and he just like, you know, goes to the cabinet and he pulls out a bag of chips, starts eating, you know, chips. Or like whenever there's junk at the at work, you know, people bring in all sorts of stuff and people just sort of snack randomly with whatever's around. There is something to be said if you like look around and watch what people do in terms of their diet and their exercise and how they appear just in a very global way health-wise. You don't typically see, you know, people who look phenomenal, who are in great shape, you know, chomping on all the random snack foods that are around. Not 100% one-to-one, but he can look at his family and say, you know, what are the lessons I can learn from them so that I don't end up as sick as they are, you know, dependent upon insulin, let's say, or what have you. And just use that as a constant, continuous reminder to say, you know what, when I get home, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, grab my little girl and we're going to go out and play on the swings, on the swing set, you know, instead of going and getting chips.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to, you know, take my dogs for a walk, or I'm going to, you know, grab my wife. We're going to go outside for a walk a little bit, or take her to the bedroom, or whatever it may be, something like that. And just reorganize his behavior in a way that has more activity and keeps him from unstructured eating, and replaces that with something that's enjoyable that he can do instead of it.
Yeah. So. The way I see it, I know bodybuilders, and I know what he's probably, people think in general would be like, well, I want to make a more extreme. I need to go to a keto diet and I need to take these supplements and, you know, and expect to turn the things around dramatically. Then, like, I feel like we have that mindset a lot of times. So I like your message. It's not as sexy of a message. You know what I mean? It's not.
No. Yeah. Well, he's not eating a structured right now. So I don't know where he falls along the bodybuilder extremist spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, he may not like fair bit of junk. He just kind of didn't say anything about, you know, obviously if you were to diet down for a show, I imagine all these, the insulin and glucose levels would all change.
That's a good point. So,
yeah. He'd probably be just fine.
All right.
So yeah, but yeah, you're right. You're right. People want to, like, that's why he asked him to be on a keto diet. You know, that's a ketogenic diet will do that, but that's a pretty extreme. That's really pretty extreme. Like, if you had asked that 20 years ago,
people,
why would you do what? What's like, you're not morbidly obese. Why do you need to go on a no carbohydrate diet? That's crazy. You don't have epilepsy. Like, what do you want to do this for? But now it's like, oh, it's because it's the rage, you know, it's the thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, that's just human nature. We're looking for the things that are, you know, you find the solutions that are completely passing in front of your eyes. And that's what we see on our computers and in the news and what have you.
Yeah. Cause I feel like I could see myself in the same situation asking a similar question and then realizing like, oh yeah, that was pretty much common sense. And it's those little things, like you said, the dog walking and stuff, that we don't think of that as making a big difference. We used to talk about that a lot back when Jordan was on the show. Cause that, you guys always talked about that was your main cardio, and I didn't realize it, you know, at the time, but that's what I did too. Was just, you know, just neat increases versus, you know, high intensity cardio. And it's worked for me, man. I'll tell you, just having a different job when I was on my feet, I could tell a big difference in just how much fat I burned, the shape that I would get in just from walking around more, you know?
Oh, it's just gigantic. There's another question. If we'll have time to get to it, maybe next time, but that's one of the bottom lines, is the guy's asking about a client of his who's changed her job.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, and that's happened before with people that I've coached, or people that have come to me who've used diets that I had previously given them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're like 3 or 4 weeks out, and they're like, I did exactly the same thing, but I'm not sure why I didn't get in shape. It's like, well, you totally changed jobs. You know, you're doing something completely different. That can be easily 400 or 500 calories a day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is your deficit for the day, basically.
Yeah.
That can be the difference between dropping a pound or two of fat each week and dropping nothing fat wise.
Do you want to do that question? I remember you saying it's kind of short.
It's a long question.
Yes.
I have a short answer.
All right. Let's see here. So this is Nutrition Nerd One. My kind of guy. I like this guy. He says, hi guys. Thank you for all the knowledge that you're sharing. Really appreciate it. I'm studying to become a nutritionist, and during the last 5 to 6 years helped people with diet and got myself pretty lean many times. So I do have some practical experience, but I have a 22-year-old female client who I dieted down last year with no problem, ended up getting around 1500 calories, and then gradually increased her calories up to around 2300, where she was able to build some muscle. 3 months ago, she wanted to diet down again, and we slowly decreased her calories and increased her cardio, but very little happened. We are now around 1,500 calories and up to 45 minutes of cardio 5 times a week and strength training 1.25 hours 6 times a week, and I don't really understand why. She's 125 pounds and relatively lean, but she wants visible abs. This last month, we started implementing carb cycling, 0 carbs in meal 1 and 15 minutes of HIIT 3 times a week, but progress is so damn slow this time. The scale isn't really moving. I have her eat all the veggies she wants, which is about 400 grams a day, not included in the 1500 calories. Last year during the diet, she had another job where she was active, and now she's not active at work. I know she does not cheat on her diet besides the one cheat meal per week. She feels fine, not drained or hungry or overtrained, but mentally is pretty rough and stressing for her and me too. Things are not working. What should we do? Should calories go even lower, skip cheat meal, or maybe a total diet break? Thanks, guys, and sorry for the long post.
So, a couple things. As I said, easy one. What kind of veggies is she eating? And this was, speaking of Dave Pulcinella, there was one of the episodes you guys did, it's been some time, like you were talking about the 5 foods that work.
Yes.
And
well,
he removed
well, the 6 foods.
The 6 foods, sorry, yes. Yeah. But Brussels sprouts was once one that he considered, and then he realized that they're so high in calories that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Remember him talking about that?
Absolutely. I remember, yeah, that's a good story too, because he had dieted and he couldn't figure out how to get that last bit off until like the light bulb turned on for him and he realized, what's the one thing I'm doing different? It was these Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, and then he read the package.
Yeah.
So she could be, you know, getting mixed vegetables that is, you know, a third or half Brussels sprouts, for instance.
Yeah.
And that could be it. So he really doesn't know exactly what she's eating. The other thing, so if I'm reading this right, they're doing 45 minutes of cardio 5 times a week and 15 minutes of HIIT 3 times a week?
Yes, sir.
And weight training an hour and 25 minutes?
6 times a week, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an hour 25 or 1.25 hours. He put a comma in there, so he might be from the UK. But so that's a shitload of exercise. I would be exhausted.
Yeah.
So, she's probably, this can happen. This has happened in research where they've measured NEAT. They just use like accelerometers and measure steps, basically that sort of thing. It's not perfect, but, and you can have situations where people start doing cardio and they don't lose any body fat. Their body composition doesn't change because they're so worn out that they're just sitting around more than they would have otherwise.
Yeah.
They completely undo the expenditure. So she has that, which may have happened regardless, but she's also got another job. And she's not that active at work. That can be huge. That can be gigantic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, also with all of that, I mean, the caloric expenditure and everything else, with that, I mean, she's probably having potentially some metabolic slowdown too.
Mm.
Eventually you're going to run into that. I don't know how big she is. She's a bikini competitor, so she's probably not, you know, ginormous, but, so she could be having a little bit of that. And so if let's say her job, let's say it was, oh gosh, let's say she was working she's working for a department store and she used to be out on the sales floor, walking around, you know, fetching clothes for women who, you know, want to try on different things. So she's back and forth across the store and, you know, running back and forth to the register and checking people. She's on her feet all the time. And now she gets some sort of a managerial position or something like that, where she ends up sitting behind a desk.
Yeah.
So that could be 500 calories a day difference easily. And then if she's just tired on top of that, maybe she's starting to take naps because she can, you know, maybe she's got something else. That could be 700 calories right there.
Mm.
If you're looking at someone if she's small, you know, that could be that's a large percentage of what our total caloric expenditure could be.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it really could add up really quite substantially. I remember there was a guy, this is a little off topic, but there was a guy when I was first moved to Florida, I had all this gym equipment in the back of my RV and I kind of kept it there. And, I moved the RV when I actually was in a rental house for a while. It was all in there and it was like, I had like 2000 pounds of weight and a bunch of boxes and stuff. And I needed to move it into the house that I now live in. And I hired some movers to do this. And I knew these guys would kick ass. And there was a guy who'd been doing this forever.
Yeah.
And he didn't like, he just lived off like soda during the day. He was probably like 40 or something like that. And like very little muscle mass, but strong. And he knew how to use leverages and he was shredded.
Yeah.
He was
okay.
Absolutely shredded. He's probably, I wouldn't be surprised if he was, you know, 3% body fat, 3.5-4% body fat, just like not a lot of muscle, but he looked almost, it looked like it could have been like a concentration camp victim to a certain degree. He was just more muscle than that. He wasn't that emaciated.
Yeah.
He was just ripped. And he'd been like that for years. And, you know, part of it was probably genetic, but he was just super active. He just adapted to all that. Yeah. Probably really good genetics, et cetera, et cetera. So that expenditure can be gigantic. And the other thing is, and I don't know how he's the guy who posted the question is training abs, but if she's already relatively lean, but she wants visible abs, if she's really relatively lean, she probably needs more ab muscle. She may be doing training abs the way people, you know, like to train abs, with a whole bunch of high rep stuff.
Okay.
She's trying to avoid getting a thick waist, but like, for instance, the rectus abdominis is of a mixed fiber type. There's really no rationale you would have for training that muscle to be larger, using some sort of a higher rep range. I always asked people, and I said, would you, if you wanted bigger arms, would you go pick up the 5-pound dumbbells and do sets of 100? Like, no. So why do you do 100 for your abs?
Yeah.
I mean, you can get some development that way, just like you can do, you know, sets of 100 push-ups and get some chest development. But for the most part, you know, for a lot of people at least, having some heavier loading there would help. So she probably just needs some more abdominal mass. She just needs, you know, more muscle there.
Okay.
She's relatively lean. So, yeah, so those are my thoughts. He just hasn't covered quite all the bases. It's interesting because he's applying all the typical tactics that you could with dropping the calories and increasing the cardio and, you know, cycling the carbs, all that kind of stuff. But he's not following her diet to a T. He doesn't know what she's eating exactly. And her NEAT is gigantic or has changed probably a lot. And that's a gigantic part of total expenditure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my guess.
Yeah, I know I mentioned before, I used to eat so much when I did delivery with 7-Up. I could eat and eat and eat, and then on top of that, go to McDonald's. And I still just like had veins everywhere. And I do think part of that is genetic for me, but I definitely have seen a substantial difference not doing that stuff now.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the calendar right now. The next episode of Muscle Minds will actually be out the day of the seminar.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah. That'll be the 28th. So that's, we're coming up on it fast, man. A couple weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whew. Yeah. I'm excited, man. I'm getting really pumped for this.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I think so too.
I haven't had a close attention to who's competing because there's no 212, but I think Josh Lenarktowicz is looking really good.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show overall, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for that. I'm just excited for the whole thing, man. I think this is going to be just a really fun year overall, and I hope everybody can come out and say hi to us too and hang out for the podcast event. That'll be cool.
Yeah, and are you encouraging people to bring their phones out and film it and, you know, sort of telecast it over the...
I just assumed everybody does that, right? That's not even something you ask people to do. They just do it, right?
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It'll get on, like, you know, the groups, the Facebook groups and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it'll be fun, man. All right, well, let's get out of here. Are you going to do some training today?
I am, yep.
What do you got? Yep.
It's upper body.
Upper body day. Okay, sounds good, man.
Yeah, you?
I had glutes, to
glutes yesterday.
Yeah, glutes are yesterday. We've got a upper body chest push day, so it'll be mostly chest, a little bit of shoulders, a little bit of triceps.
Okay. Yeah. And you'll just keep your glutes nice and tight during all those movements, just to make sure that they're where they need to be.
And to show off to the ladies.
Right. There you go.
All right, man, let's get out of here.
I can't wait to see you do the glute roll.
I don't even know.
Like Lucas Osladil does. And I think, who else used to do one of those? I think Chris Cormier used to do a glute roll.
Did Chris Cormier do it too?
He did the ab roll. There was somebody else that used to do a glute roll. I don't know. But
Osladil has those glutes, though. Like, I don't think I can. I got a little ways to go. I got some work to do.
Shoot for the stars, buddy. You'll hit the moon. No moon pose pun intended there.
All right, guys. For another episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott. Excuse me. Let me try that again. For another episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, go to fortitudetraining.net. We will see you soon.
Adios.